extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Charlie Davies, David Goss. We got the A-team for U.S.-Mexico week, folks. We wouldn't have it any other way. Friday.
One backhand to Kalen Carr.
Whoa. Yeah, that'd be the A-plus team. We would go up a level with Kalen, right? That's what I'm saying.
No,
Kalen catches a stray. Like,
I love
60
you,
seconds into
Kalen.
The show.
You know I love you, man. God. You know I don't mean it. You know you'll be right here with us, and it'll be the A-plus team. All right, look, it's a big week ahead. Friday, Tuesday, CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers are back. The Octagon. Eight teams battling out the top three right now are Mexico, U.S., and Canada. And oh, by the way, Mexico goes to the U.S. to Cincinnati on Friday. Then they go to Edmonton on Tuesday. So big week for them, big week for everybody as they chase 2022 World Cup qualification. We got a full show for you today here on Club and Country. Cesar Hernandez of the Mexican Soccer Show will join us. He has been every time the U.S. face off against Mexico recently. We really enjoy having him. So he'll give us the full scouting report, all the storylines, all the narratives. What's Tata thinking? What is he thinking? What are the fans thinking? What's the media thinking down in Mexico? He'll wrap that up for us, and we'll go through every single storyline for Greg Berhalter in the U.S. From Christian Pulisic's health and the fact that Thomas Tuchel and Chelsea don't seem to want to see him play very many minutes. Don't know how many he'll play, but we'll see if the U.S. Honor that or respect that or follow those, those suggestions. Let's call them. Of course, we'll have the pregame shows on Twitter Spaces when the lineups drop an hour ahead of time of these games. We'll have the postgame show on MLS channels, so you get all the reaction straight from us, and we'll push those postgame shows out as podcasts. So if you can't catch them live, you don't have time, you don't want to watch, you just want to listen, they will be right there for you. On demand. Reminder, though, 10 days until the Audi 2021 MLS Cup playoffs begin. So it feels like decision day just ended. Like, I just woke up from that, and we did the podcast Monday. So if you don't have that or haven't listened to that, go back, listen. We sum it all up. All the results, all the storylines, everything you need to know ahead of games starting on November 20th. Again, that is in 10 days from today, Saturday. The first game is going to be Union Red Bulls, and then it'll roll on from there, doing the Twitter shows on Spaces ahead of time, as well as the post-game shows for those. Also, get your Audi Bracket Challenge down on paper. You can chop and change. You can change it. Unfortunately, we did our picks. I don't think we're allowed to change those, but knowing us, we probably will. Anyway, Doyle's playoff tiers. That'll make your decisions easy. Steve Zakuani's look at round one. Same thing. Joel Rowley's strengths and weaknesses for every team. Boom. And Greg Seltzer has your predictions if you want to get on the Seltzer train. If not, that's all good, too. U.S.-Mexico Friday, 9:10 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2, Univision, Tudayen. They got at Jamaica on Tuesday. And then Canada is home against Costa Rica, then home against Mexico. That Costa Rica game's on Paramount Plus on Friday at 9:05 p.m. Eastern. So get your double boxes ready. And let's start with this question. And Doyle, I'm coming to you. How do you feel right now ahead of U.S.-Mexico about this game, about this occasion, about what it means for qualification, but about what we know it all means for this program and both of these fan bases in general? I mean, this is it. This is the one. This is what everybody gets up for. Are you up yet, or will you get there?
I'm guessing I'll get there, but right now it feels, I don't know. I don't have a good feel for it. You know, part of it is that the U.S. are still sort of evolving as a team. Like, there have been some really good moments in qualifying so thus far, and obviously some very, very bad moments. Part of it is that kind of the same for Mexico, because they have some young guys coming through, midfield in the back line, and they have Raul Jimenez getting healthy finally and back, presumably, as a starter, leading the front line. So there's I guess there's just more unknowns. And I think the other part of it is it's not the Hex, the Ocho has a little bit more of a margin for error than the Hexagonal did. And, there's still a ton riding on this game. There always is when the U.S. plays Mexico, but it doesn't feel as do or die as it has over the past 20 years. And I kind of miss that a little bit, I think.
Let me get the inevitable out of the way. We have a person on the show who has scored a goal against Mexico. Charlie, you do not have to tell the story. You don't have to stanky leg. You don't have to talk about Azteca. You don't have to. You can keep him. We're done. We got that out of the way. Do you have more? Is there more in it for you emotionally right now than for Doyle? Because I'm kind of on Doyle's side, and maybe it's sort of it's not a hangover from decision day in the MLS season, but there is sort of like this, oh my God, okay, we're right back and I have to get my energy up again and I'm not quite ready for it. And I'm sure I will be by the time Friday rolls around, but where do you stand?
I stand where I think most Mexicans stand right now, which is they need this game. The Americans have faced Mexico twice and two wins from those matches. They are going into this with, I think, the expectation that worst case scenario, it's a draw. That's for them, because I think that they've come together and that whole buildup of, man, we haven't beaten Mexico in forever. They're the best team. That feeling really doesn't exist anymore, because Mexico are super beatable, right? For the Mexican teams that we've seen, you know, since I've come into to kind of my career, most of them are super dominant when it comes to possession. And it is, whether you're playing home or away, or you're in form or you're not in form, you know it's going to be a battle. And more times than not, you're not going to get to touch the ball that often. So you got to be super influential when you do have possession and when you do have a chance. This Mexico team right now looks kind of like a shell of themselves. And it's because they don't have those players, you know, Guardado, who is, I think, well past it, in my opinion. He's not the Andres Guardado that we've seen over, you know, years past. You know, you look at some of the other midfielders that they have, Hector Herrera, who's not in form, who's not playing consistently. That doesn't strike fear into, you know, these U.S. men's national team players. Now they've done it. Now it's, you got to come in with the same kind of energy levels, but you know what to expect. For the Mexican team, they need to reestablish themselves. So I think it doesn't have the juice that it normally has, considering this young U.S. team has beaten them twice now and that they're playing at home and the expectation is to go out there and get a result.
And I think to Charlie's point, and a large part of it has to do with COVID, is you've got two groups where they haven't really defined themselves to the opponent yet. And you think of what Landon Donovan meant to the Mexican national team fans and what Rafa Marquez meant to U.S. MNT fans. And there are a ton of other names I could throw in there over the last 25, 30 years that have had a defined place in the rivalry. And these two teams until this summer hadn't really played in 2 years. And Weston McKennie, I think, is becoming one of those players for Mexican national team fans, but it's only happened once with him in the game. So I think that this is something that's growing, and that's part of that uncertainty around this game. Is you used to walk into a national, you know, into this rivalry and be able to say, these are things I know are going to happen, right? I know someone's going to hack Landon Donovan. That's going to set the crowd off. That's going to set these players off. You know that Pablo Mascherini's coming in with a 2-foot tackle at some point. You know Osvaldo Sanchez is going to try and take someone down after a goal for a celebration. Whatever it is, there are knowns, and I think those don't exist as much anymore, which on the one hand, I think changes your perception going in, but on the other hand, is really exciting what the future of this rivalry looks like.
And I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, so I want to clarify myself that I just think that the Mexican fans and players have a lot more to lose in this match than the U.S. fans and players. And the expectation for the U.S. team is we're expecting to win. We're at home. We've beaten them now twice on our soil, and we've already done it, so we can do it again. In worst case, we draw. Fine. But for Mexican national team players and the fans, it's we need to win. We need to reestablish ourselves as the dominant team in CONCACAF. And right now we're wobbly. And the U.S., they don't fear us anymore. And we don't even fear Canada for that matter. So I think that's why this match is a little bit different in the sense that it's not a kind of a tough, unbeatable task for this young U.S. men's national team.
I just want to say Cincinnati is going to be really interesting to me to see what the environment is there. We've seen sort of the tickets go bam, 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 as you would expect. But if the U.S. can beat Mexico there, that they will match Cincinnati for the number of wins in TQL Stadium this year. I just want to remind you all of that fact.
Don't do that to Cincy fans.
Yeah.
I didn't do it to Cincinnati fans. FC Cincinnati did it to Cincinnati fans.
I can't put it to Cincy fans.
That's true. Before we get to Cesar Hernandez and sort of the nitty-gritty on Mexico, because as we go through an order here of preview, I think it is important for us to understand what's going on with Mexico, what's going on with Tata, what are the stakes for them before we get into the nitty-gritty of the U.S. and how Greg Berhalter might set up his team to try to get those 3 points in Cincinnati. But Doyle, I want to better understand sort of what you were saying about the octagon versus the hex. And let's try to put some stakes on this for the U.S. before we get to Cesar. Because in the past, it did feel not life or death, but a little bit of life or death, especially home games against Mexico. Why doesn't it feel quite that way this time?
If it was an octagon last time, if it was an ocho instead of the hexagonal, the U.S. would have made the World Cup. You know, there, like, you can screw up. You can have that terrible loss in Cuba or that terrible performance in Panama, and you still have time to recover. Or you could drop home points against Mexico, and over the longer period of time, the talent should shine through. The differentiator should be talent. And the U.S. and Mexico and Canada, frankly, just outstrip the rest of CONCACAF in terms of just raw talent. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't going to be screw-ups, and it's not the only differentiator. Mm-hmm. We've seen it happen to all three of these teams on any given night. But it's more games means a truer representation of who the best teams are. And I think, you know, Mexico, the U.S., and Canada are the three best teams by a pretty decent margin in CONCACAF.
And not just more games, but the more games per window has stretched depth even more. So
that's
even
true.
If you looked at the Costa Rica golden generations, they never had the depth of Mexico has.
They
no one in the region
15
has
players.
The depth
they had 15,
has.
16 players.
Exactly. Right. And so I think you would have even seen it in those qualifying cycles different than what you're seeing now. And for, I think Honduras is the easiest example, or Panama. They're pretty much playing the same 11 every game because they don't have options, and they don't have a league where you can pull players from consistently and get an international level production. And so I think what you see over the course of this window is, or over qualifying, is not just that the U.S. and Mexico won't slip up. It's that these teams are having trouble outside of the U.S., Mexico, and Canada establishing themselves against each other. And so every time it feels like, oh, the U.S. made a mistake at El Salvador, well, that's going to come back to bite them. Costa Rica loses at home. Jamaica loses at home. Then Jamaica goes on the road and beats Honduras. And right now, what I think we're going to see coming out of this window, if a U.S. or Canada or Mexico gets 6 points, is a huge separation between first and fourth for the first time in qualifying.
Well, I'm of, I think, the camp where when you approach these three games, I think you should play your best 11, the first one, and the second one, and then reassess where guys are on the third one. But most of these countries are saying, we don't have that option, so we just got to go, hopefully, play our two, you know, their first game and the third game and hope for the best. Or just hope for, you know, the home games, and we kind of just concede the away games because they don't have that depth where they can rotate. The U.S., I think, Greg Berhalter has looked at it maybe a little too analytical and saying, you know, let me go best 11 first one, swap it up the second one and go back to the third one. But then you're losing rhythm and chemistry. And some of the guys, let's be honest, these guys are young.
Mm-hmm.
They can play all three, you know, but I understand, you know, now we're talking about Thomas Tuchel saying, hey, you need to be careful with Christian Pulisic. Like, we need him. And so don't just play him 90 minutes both matches because he can do it, because it's not going to be best for him. So I could see him against this Mexico match being used as a sub and then starting in the Jamaica match. I could see that if that was something that, you know, would benefit him in particular.
We got a big conversation on that coming. We will get there in just a second. Let's sort of reset before we get to Cesar Hernandez here. The first round of matches here, and there are only two this time around. Remember, it's not a three, so these teams that don't have that depth, they can focus on the two. Honduras hosts Panama. El Salvador hosts Jamaica. Jamaica with Leon Bailey. Jamaica with Mikel Antonio. Both those guys in the squad this time around, and that'll be a different matchup for the U.S. Correct. The roster says it.
Yeah. Last time they got called in, they didn't travel to Central America. They only played in the home game. Well, Leon Bailey wasn't called in, but Mikel Antonio did. Continue. Sorry.
U.S. is going to be a home game for Jamaica. Yeah. They won't have a crowd, if I recollect
correctly.
I think it's
about 4,000 they opened it up to in the end.
Okay. So they opened it up a little bit? All right. Yeah. Well,
they
Canada hosts Costa Rica.
Was coming, and they were like, we can't hold people back.
Exactly. People need to see Sam. They need to see Sam. U.S.-Mexico in this first round. Here is the order right now in the octagon as far as standings go. Top three get into the World Cup. The fourth goes into a playoff. Mexico on 14 points, number one. U.S. second, 11 points. Canada third, 10 points. Panama on 8, and then it's Costa Rica on 6. Jamaica, El Salvador both on 5, and then Honduras at the very, very bottom right now on 3. The only nations with positive goal differential are the top three. Mexico plus 7, U.S. plus 5, Canada plus 6. What would a win mean for the U.S., Doyle, the third in this calendar year? We've sort of talked about, and you did, Charlie, about the lack of fear factor with Mexico, and it comes back to the Gold Cup final, it comes back to a Nations League final, and two different groups that got the job done. Doyle, what would a third win this year mean, and do we have the roster right now, in your mind, to do it? With Sergiño Dest and Gio Reyna out, those were two key contributors. With John Brooks not called in. No Josh Sargent, who, by the way, started that Nations League final. I mean, what do you think of the roster, and is it enough to get the win against Mexico?
So you asked me like six different questions right now. Which one do you want me to answer?
The last two.
So what do I think of the roster? It's pretty similar to the roster that I would have called in if I was Greg Berhalter. Obviously, no Reyna hurts. No Dest kind of hurts, though I'm not sure he would have started against Mexico. If you remember back to the Nations League, Berhalter had him starting at kind of a left wing back slash left midfield thing. And like, I entirely get the impetus to not trust Sergiño Dest defensively in big games. I mean, Barcelona might, I hope they're not, like, I hope Xavi has a different view of it, but like, Barcelona a month ago were like, all right, this guy's a winger. Like, we can't trust him at full. But anyway, so I'm not sure that Dest is a huge loss. Reyna is. And my hope is that he gets healthy and we get to see him in January. But, like, given that, the rest of it all pretty much makes sense. Like, I like Luca Della Torre a lot. I would have had him on the depth chart here, but he's not going to play. I'm going to play McKennie, Adams, and Yunus Musa in central midfield. You know, that's the guys that, if I'm Greg Berhalter, I'm absolutely riding with. You know, there's questions about Christian Pulisic. I'm fine with Tim Weah starting on one wing and Brendan Aaronson on the other. I have questions about who should start on which wing or where which wing Pulisic should play on, and we'll get to that later, I'm sure. I guess the John Brooks one is the big question. And look, John Brooks put out a tweet saying, I get why I was dropped. I've been bad. I can confirm that. He was bad in those two games. And Walker Zimmerman has not been. So I completely understand the rationale. I'm good with this roster. My only real worry is that Ricardo Pepi's 18 years old, and he's had a bunch of really good games, but he's had a knock over the past month. He hasn't scored in a while. And there's no true backup center forward behind him. And I know that Jesus Ferreira had a very good year in MLS, but he's had that year playing as a second forward. He's not he's not a false nine, man. He's a second forward. So that is my one worry in all of this with regards to the roster. What was the second question that you asked, Weeby?
What would a win mean? A third win in a year, in a calendar year for this program, for these players. And I mean, these are young guys sort of in their first cycle against Mexico with an opportunity to really prove something in the region.
It would prove something, right? Like the Nations League win was great and the Gold Cup win was great. And those felt like big steps, but we all know that nothing is like World Cup qualifying, even if it's watered down by 33% because it's the Ocho instead of the Hex. Nothing is like World Cup qualifying. If you beat Mexico in World Cup qualifying, especially after what happened in the last cycle, you have picked up the baton again from, you know, Landon and Clint and Charlie's generation all the way back to like Claudio Reyna and, you know, the great generation of the 90s who sort of put U.S. soccer back on the map after 60 years. And I think it would be a big step in that regards. But I'm not the narratives guy. You're the narratives guy, Weeby. So I will read your column after this happens, if the U.S. managed to win, to figure out exactly what that means.
You know,
you're an assignment editor now, though.
You know, we're all sports fans, and when your team wins and loses, there's different ways you process it. There's different things that get you excited or you react to. I think if the U.S. were to beat Mexico on Friday, it would be a huge deal. To do it three times in one year would be unbelievable. To do it out of the dark ages that they just came out of not qualifying in 2018, the Dave Sarokin year, the confusion, the anger, all those things would be massive. If it's done with a bunch of young players who came out of MLS academies against Mexico at TQL Stadium, the amount of people I'm going to dunk on social media is going to be aggressively dangerous. So maybe it would be a bad thing if it happened. But that just got me excited. Thinking about that just got me pumped. So,
see, the hype is coming in. You just needed a little bit of time just to think deeper about this. Before we get to all the details on the U.S. side, let's talk Mexico. And to do so, of course, we're going to go to Cesar Hernandez. All right, it's time for an AT&T 5G call to the field. They say, know your enemies better than your friends. Cesar Hernandez is our friend, not an enemy, Cesar. But El Tri, maybe for U.S. national team fans, is a little bit of that. All the takes from Cesar, Mexican Soccer Show. Check out his work this week ahead of U.S.-Mexico on MLSsoccer.com and at The Guardian. Cesar, welcome back, man. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see all of you as well. Excited to be here talking about a certain match on Friday. And
what match? I don't need what. Yeah. Nobody cares about this.
Cesar, this is a huge match for you because I think you were on the League's Cup final.
That's true.
The Campeones Cup final. Yeah. So you're one for one right now. We're all one for one. This is the rubber match.
That's true. Although, before we started recording, I felt like there was a lot of arguing about Brazil versus Norway or something like that.
It was interesting.
Like I told you guys, it was interesting being behind the scenes before we started recording and be like, oh, okay, is this what they usually talk about?
To watch all the chaos in the background.
Yeah, maybe we should release
topic.
Maybe we should release the pre-show meetings as a different podcast. But then we couldn't say everything that we want to say, so no, we won't do that. Let's jump into it, man. For Mexico, we've sort of given the basics on the U.S. side, and we're going to dive into those in a little bit. This feels like the toughest window for Mexico. I don't think it feels like it. It is. At U.S., at Canada. They're in first right now. They're right there. Top of the table in the octagon or whatever it is we're calling this. It hasn't been universally agreed at this point. But they could go with two losses and some other results around the region. They could go from first to maybe even tied for fourth.
Correct.
Maybe.
Yeah.
How big is this for Tata and the boys?
I mean, it's massive. We talked about beforehand, but this is going to be an incredibly difficult window for them. It's not only matches up against the United States and Canada, but they're two away games. It's going to be the coldest window by far for them. Recently, we've seen them training the last few days in Indianapolis. Actually, Torrado, who works for the FMF, he used to play for Indy 11, so I'm sure he might have hooked it up with some spots over there for training.
Beautiful Indy.
The IUPUI fields are really hard to come by right now in November.
But it's pretty funny. You see the team right now trading in long sleeves. Some of them even have some beanies and some gloves out there. And I imagine Edmonton might be pretty bad next week. But they're prepping for the match right now. And it's going to be... It's going to be a tough one. We saw those losses earlier this, season, because sometimes it feels like a season when it comes to the Mexican national team, who have an incredibly long list of games each year. But we saw those losses to the U.S. men's national team twice early this year. We saw that in the Nations League final. We saw it in the Gold Cup final. And it's a matter of redemption. And even though Tata is currently safe in his position with El Tri, as we've talked about, all it takes is one or two bad results and things can change quite quickly, significantly quickly for the national team.
Currently safe in his position as Mexican national team coach. That's a good way to describe anybody who's the Mexican national team coach at any time. I just looked over the forecast because I was curious here. U.S.-Mexico in Cincinnati, of course, TQL Stadium. High of 56, low of 33. Right now in the forecast, no sign of precipitation. So those are decent conditions. That's fine. You might need a beanie if you're soft.
Or
long sleeves. Sure, that's your choice. But Edmonton, next Tuesday, high of 32. Wait for it. Low of 13. And I'm just looking at a little clip art picture right here. But that looks like snow coming out of a gray cloud in Edmonton next Tuesday.
You guys, the best part about that is... I think we all operate in Fahrenheit, but if you've been following the Canadian media, they talk about in Celsius. So they're like, this game could be at zero or negative. And I forget to do the conversion. I'm like, whoa, they're going to play an outdoor soccer game at 0 degrees? It just sounds more intimidating.
Yeah, this is going to be tough. What's the big storyline for Mexico right now? Like, I look at this team, and I know Raul Jimenez was back, and he was back against Canada, and in the last window, he's back at the club level. That seems like a big storyline. Is Tecatito going to start? That seems like one as well. But I look at the midfield and the back line, and that's where, for me at least, and I don't have the depth of knowledge that you do, that's where the question marks start to pop up.
Yeah, most definitely, because you would think that, you know, Mexico, they're fine. Raul Jimenez is back. He's scoring for a club for country. You know, Chucky's doing all right. You know, Tecatito could be a little hit or miss, but you still think with that three-man front line, everything should be fine with a Mexico. But that's not going to be the case at all this Friday, because in defense, Araujo, he's in the call-up, but he won't be able to play in this game, this upcoming game on Friday, because of yellow card suspension. Cesar Montes suffered an injury. So now you have this situation where you're not really sure who Tata's going to go with in the central defensive partnership. Is it Moreno and is it Johan Vasquez? Which, in theory, I think that's what is going to happen, but Vasquez is still kind of young. He's still kind of an up-and-coming player. Yes, he's getting minutes in Serie A, but they're very, very, very limited. As they go with the Cata Dominguez, who has more experience, but this isn't, you know, like a veteran you can really rely on for Mexico, and someone who doesn't really have a huge amount of pace there either. So does it go with Vasquez and Moreno? That could probably work, but Vasquez lacks experience, or does he go with Cata, where if he does go with Cata Moreno, I mean, that's going to be an exciting opportunity for the U.S. men's national team against this back line, which will definitely lack some pace if Tata decides to go with those two.
I'm curious to know if you think, heading into these two qualifiers, given that the Mexican defense hasn't been up to par, usually is. You talk about the U.S. with Christian Pulisic and seeing how many minutes he gets in this upcoming game, but Ricardo Pepi, who has done well, and Brent Aaronson. And then you throw in Canada, who I think arguably have the best front three in CONCACAF.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what are the expectations, and what are you scared about knowing that you have two very dynamic attacks coming your way?
Well, I think what I'm most worried about is when I'm looking at that back line, when I'm seeing at what the U.S. men's national, what the Canada can throw at Mexico, the issue is I'd be a little bit more comfortable knowing that the only actual defensive issues were those two central defensive players right there. But the other issue is that I haven't had a lot of confidence in Mexico's fullbacks either. You know, in theory, you would have someone like Gerardo Arteaga as the starting left back, who's been doing well in Belgium. He's getting minutes week in and week out over there. In theory, you'd have someone like him over Gallardo, who could be, I don't know, a little hit and miss. And then you look at right back, where more than likely Xhaka is going to be getting the start. And this is a Thigudas player who doesn't have the same pace he used to have. He doesn't have the same defensive capabilities that he used to have. So for me, what I'm most worried about is when I'm looking at the Canadian attack, when I'm looking at the American attack, it's not just about exploiting what Mexico is going to lack in that central defensive partnership this Friday or next week as well, but also the inconsistencies of the fullbacks as well. And that's going to be by far, I think, the weak link for them, because I have a lot more confidence about the midfield, about especially the attack, but the defense, I don't know. it might be a very, very difficult international window for them.
Things might be different. Oh, go ahead.
This is probably a dumb question to ask, but you haven't said his name yet, so I'm just curious. Edson Alvarez, we've seen him play across the back line early in his career. Yeah. He obviously starts at D-mid for Ajax, and he's done it for Mexico. Yeah. Is there any chance of him either a center back or a back five in this game?
Yes, there is most definitely a chance for that. And we've seen the way that Tata plays in this 4-3-3 system, that sometimes what ends up happening is that Edson will sit behind the two center backs, and it will look more like a five-man backline or three-man backline, if you will. That being said, I think he's far too important as a defensive midfielder. And I know Luis Romo can play as a defensive midfielder, and in theory, he is kind of the backup to Edson Alvarez as a D-mid. But he just, I don't know, defensively, he just can't do the same stuff as Edson Alvarez. And especially if you're going to have someone like Guardado and Hector Herrera in the midfield, I think you 100% need Edson. Because if you take him out of the equation, things get a little dicey in there in the midfield for L3.
Well, I was just going to add, I've noticed when Edson Álvarez is tasked with dropping back so deep in between the center backs, almost like a sweeper in a way.
Yeah.
It takes away from the midfield.
And 100%.
The Mexican midfield has been overrun. When you look at what Canada was able to do with their three-man midfield and then the U.S., I think that really has played, I think, a huge part in Mexico not being as dominant as they typically are, because now you're losing second balls and you're not keeping possession because Edson Álvarez is dropping so deep.
100%. And you see the role that he's playing with in Ajax, you know, this isn't someone who sits a little bit further back. This is someone who's battling for those balls in the midfield and also someone who's helping out with the distribution going forward. So I think that, yeah, you could start him as a center back, but like you said, I mean, that just takes away so much from the midfield. So I think he's the vital cog in this system, in this starting 11. He's in the heart of that 11, and he's probably the most important player outside of Raul Jimenez when you're looking at the starting 11.
Seems some parallels there with Tyler Adams as well for the U.S. Can I just ask you to give us a scouting report and those at home who maybe don't know Johan Vasquez that well? It seems like he is the likely partner for Hector Moreno, but like, what, five games this year, or starts at least for Genoa? And I think it's 117 first-team minutes for the Mexican national team. I mean, it's not like they're bringing in, like, this big known quantity. He is sort of the next generation at 23, but what are his attributes? Do you think he'll get the start? What do you see from him?
So when I watched him at Pumas, because that's where he came from before he went to Serie A, something that always stood out to me was his composure with the ball at his feet, his distribution, how good he was in the air, and how, and probably perhaps due to his age, how he had a little bit more pace than some of the other center backs that you would see in Liga MX. So I think he's a very good, well-rounded player. That said, he is still someone who's very young. So, you know, it's he's I'm not entirely sure if I would want to rely on him in a big game like this, because he doesn't have much experience in big matches like this. So I think that's what I'm most worried about. I'm a little worried about him being perhaps a little overwhelmed by the situation going up against Canada and the U.S. But at the very least, he is a very well-rounded and up-and-coming player. And there's a good reason why he went over to Europe to go play for Genoa, because I do think that he is an important important player for the future of the national team. But would I feel comfortable starting him this Friday? I don't know. That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
And when I look at this midfield, because you talked about Hector Herrera and Andres Guardado, great at keeping the ball in distribution, but lack mobility and pace. Yeah. One player that's caught my eye since I've seen him kind of introduced into the Mexican national team is Sebastian Cordoba.
Yes.
And when you watch him play, is this a player that can be kind of inserted into lineup to give them that edge, to kind of give them that one player who can finally break the lines with his, you know, I think he's got quick movement and agility that the others, frankly, don't have.
Yes, 100%. And I think that he is better going forward with the ball and with his shots from distance and with his chance creation than an Herrera or a Guardado. The issue is, if you're going to place him in this system, he'll more than likely be a left center mid. And that means taking out Guardado from this. I know Guardado, he isn't the player that he used to be, but he's still the captain. You know, he's still someone who has some vital experience with his team and up against Canada, up against U.S. men's national team. Do you take that risk by bringing out a veteran like him and by bringing in someone like Cordoba? Because for me, if I was Tata, I would probably bring Cordoba in as one of the first subs in the second half. If things aren't working, if the midfield's looking a little stale and they need someone to really refresh things and change things up, yes, that's when I would bring in Cordoba. But would I take Guardado out of the 11 in a game like this? I'm not. I don't know. I don't know.
Take him out. Yeah. Take him out.
Leave him in. No. Leave him in.
I don't know. It's a tough decision either way for Tata. And I think the only real guarantee, I would say, is probably Chucky Jimenez and Tecatito up top. But in the midfield, maybe you do.
Do your best Tata whisperer right now. Who are the three going to be in that midfield, in your opinion? Actually, who would be the second center back?
Before you do that,
all right,
also take this into consideration. Hector Herrera does not play week in and week out with Atletico Madrid. Yeah. He's a great player, right, when he's playing and he's fit. But he's not in rhythm. He's rusty.
Yeah.
So when the U.S. looks at every time they're playing their players, they want players who are playing consistently. I think every national team wants players who are playing consistently, no matter where they are. Now you can throw. Now you can put together your 11.
Give us the three. Give us the three midfielders, and give us that second center back. We assume next to Hector Moreno.
Not
who do you think it'll be?
Yeah, actually, I want to know who you would put there. Versus.
All right. Well, those are two very different questions. You guys want to know who I would? Okay.
Yeah. You. Okay. Who would you put, and then give us who Tata's gonna put?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think you might as well go through it. So I think Ochoa, I think that's who I'd have a goal. I would have Gallardo, Moreno, and Vasquez, and Xhaka in the back line. In the midfield, I would take the chance. I would go with Cordova. I would go with Edson. And you know what? Just to mix things up, too, I would go with Charlie Rodriguez, too.
Get out of here.
Midfielder. I think just to, like, as you guys mentioned, just to add a little bit more mobility, just to add a little bit more of that energy and drive going into the final third. So that's what I would do. What I think Tata's going to do, I think he's probably going to go with the same backline and goalkeeper that I said, Gallardo, Moreno, Vasquez, and Xhaka, Ochoa, Net. I think the midfield, more than likely, is going to be Guardado, Edson, Ache, and then up top, I think both he and I would agree that it would be Chucky Jimenez and Tecatito.
Interesting. We'll have to wait and see what happens when those lineups come out. Of course, we'll be on Twitter Spaces analyzing all of it with Cesar as well. So if you want news from both sides and takes from both sides, we'll have it. Let's talk about that front line. Where in your mind is Raul Jimenez right now? Health, on ability to impact the game in the way that we had been so accustomed to him impacting the game before, you know, the injury and everything that happened?
I mean, he's fully back. I mean, I don't know if you guys have a chance to watch his Wolves games, but he's on an incredible run of form. And it's not just his goal scoring, because people might be looking at his stats, be like, oh, well, he isn't scoring week in and week out. But what makes Raul Jimenez is not just his goal scoring, but his chance creation. It's fighting for the ball. It's pressuring the opposition. It's, once again, being this well-rounded figure that could do so much. Mm-hmm. And the final third, that can drop back, that can get the ball, that can distribute the ball really quickly. He's got pace, he's got power. It's like, it's such a joy to watch him back on the field once again. So I think that Raul Jimenez is going to be L3's most important player. Chucky's in a good run of form right now. Tecatito, I don't know. There's something going on behind the scenes with him and Porto right now, because he's not getting starts, he's not getting minutes. You know, all the rumors and reports are saying that, you know, he wanted out of the team out of the summer. Things didn't work out. Maybe there's going to be something over the winter where he ends up transferring somewhere. But either way, it looks like he's no longer in the picture for Porto. And that's not exactly good news for L3 going into this game, which does make me think maybe Orbelin Pineda might be getting the start here. I don't think that's a good chance. I just think it's something that might be possible. There might be a curveball that throws this Friday, and you have a front line with Chucky Jimenez and Orbelin, but more than likely going to be Chucky Jimenez, Tecatito, and of course Raul Jimenez just being Raul Jimenez and doing a lot of work in that final third.
Flip it now. From the Mexican perspective, from Tata's perspective, looking at the U.S. and what they'll bring to this game, what do you think he's focused on as far as the opponent goes here?
I think the big question is, what role does Christian Pulisic have? Do you prep for this game knowing anticipating that he will be a starter? Do you prep for this game knowing that potentially he's going to be an option off the bench? You know, do you focus instead on someone like a Pepe, who doesn't have an enormous amount of experience, and who looks like, what, according to you guys, like, what, the only true out-and-out striker that the U.S. brought in this camp, unless they play a Falstein system? But I think you think about what those players could provide in attack, and also, I think you also... I know Tata's system is a very attack-minded system. He likes to throw numbers forward. He likes to overwhelm opposition. But maybe in a game like this, in a game against Canada, maybe you tell Xhaka, maybe you tell Gallardo to not push forward nearly as much when you look at the attacking threat that might be there. Maybe you tell, I don't know, maybe Moreno and Vasquez to sit a little bit further back too, because this is going to be, as we've talked about, the most difficult window for Mexico in World Cup qualifying. So I do wonder if Gallardo and Shaka are going to be making the same constant deep, like, relentless runs that they traditionally make in World Cup qualifying, and maybe you ask one of them or both of them to just sit a little bit further back up against the USA and Canada.
Put it on paper, put it on tape, Cesar. Predictions. For this Thursday, for the entire window,
yeah,
how's this go for L3?
You say for this Thursday,
not what you
Friday?
Want, not what you're hoping for. How do you think it goes?
I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw this Friday. And next week against Canada, that'll be a 2-1 win for Mexico. If I were Tata, I would hope that Mexico doesn't take as many risks as they traditionally do. Maybe they sit a little bit further back. Maybe they're a little bit more cautious and make things difficult. And you hope that Ochoa, because that's a name I haven't brought up yet, but he's in a great run of form right now. He seems to have found a revival, almost like a renaissance in his career in his mid to late 30s. You know, maybe someone like Ochoa really steps up in this game and denies some opportunities. And I think in a final third, you're going to have Jimenez being Jimenez and hopefully providing a goal and assist. But I think Mexico, they're going to get the draw here on Friday. And next week, I think that's a different argument in itself right there, what could happen next week. But I think they can get a narrow and a very tough away win.
Cesar, let me just remind you here.
Yeah. What?
32 degrees. Aberdeen is the low. It's going to happen tonight. It's going to be snowing.
Alphonso Davies. Tijon Buchanan.
I know.
Jonathan Davis. We're not going to talk about
the center backs, but yes. Those guys.
Well, hey, they got the 1-1 draw in Azteca.
Yeah.
You're telling me at home.
Look, this is an opportunity. It's an opportunity for L3, right, to exert control and to reestablish or to reiterate, probably more accurately, that we are the big boss. Mm-hmm. Like, we are the final boss. We're going to come to both of your houses in one window and get 4 points, as Cesar says.
It's not as if all these players, like, especially some of these European-based players, it's not like are all playing in like 70 degree, like 80 degree, like heat all
it's
the time.
It's resort
like,
weather.
You see, No, that's not what I'm saying. Like,
but Raul, it ain't Edmonton.
Raul Jimenez. Like, I mean, not saying that it's like incredibly cold and over in England, but like, I don't know. If after dealing with some of the weather in the EPL, I know it's a lot more colder in Canada, obviously, but why couldn't he deal with a situation like this? And especially when you have an informed player like him, like going up against Canada. I know you have Davies. I know you have David, who are going to make things incredibly difficult for Mexico. I'm not going to pretend as if they're not going to make things difficult. I know that. I 100% know that. But if you have an informed Ochoa, if you have an informed Jimenez, if you have Chucky, I mean, why wouldn't you give them, I'm not even going to say a fighting chance, but I'm going to say even the advantage here. Up against Canada.
Well, you wouldn't give the advantage because you just drew at home to the same team, right? So when looking at it, right, you have to say Canada gets the draw in Mexico City. But I'm not going to go out and say that I think it's an obvious one for Canada because I actually think they've struggled at home. Yeah. Their two best performances have been at the U.S. and at Mexico. They played well against Panama after they went behind, but they've struggled in dictating the game themselves. We're going to preview a lot more about Canada coming up. But I think that one sets up kind of nice for Mexico, where maybe they don't have to have the bulk of possession, and then you get Chucky and Tecatito in transition, and that's where they can be at their most dangerous. Obviously, that's a similar way that they scored against Canada in the first game. So it's going to be a weird one. Mexico's probably going to lose 7-0 on Friday night, though, so you never know. It's just, like, super confusing.
We got to needle you, Cesar, but we appreciate all your insight.
Wait, can I ask one last question?
We appreciate it. Yeah, go
so
for it.
I've thought of it this way, and we haven't really talked about it yet, but this is probably the last time, right? The next World Cup,
yes.
The U.S., Mexico, man. And Canada are co-hosting. Has that been a conversation at all in Mexican fandom in the media?
I think the conversation is actually what you just said right there. It's like, oh, wait, like, that's actually going to happen. I think there's just a sudden realization. I feel like the conversation hasn't really, like, gained ground just yet because it's... To be honest, someone brought it up. I was recording a podcast last week, and I think I even mentioned it's like, well, we'll see what happens in the next World Cup qualifying run. And then they corrected me, and I completely forgot that, this is going to be the last one for a while. But yeah, maybe what that means, just for old time's sake, we'll have Rafa Marquez
nice.
Step on as a last minute addition. You know?
Yeah, old time's sake, baby. Dos a cero. That's what I'm hearing.
An extra red card right at the end.
Exactly. Just for nostalgia.
Yep.
All right, Cesar Hernandez will join us pregame on Twitter Spaces. We'll do that on Matt Doyle's handle, as always, ahead of these U.S. games and Canada games, CONCACAF World Cup qualifying.
Matt
and then
Doyle will not be
afterwards.
Here on Friday. He will be enjoying
not
the
Matt.
Game as a fan. Oh, so it'll be on ours.
Then I guess it will be on mine, I'm going to guess. Yeah, on my handle, says Anders in the chat. Thanks, Anders, for providing the details that we so often need. And then, of course, on the postgame show, Cesar will be there with us as well. Appreciate your time, man. Go check out the Mexican Soccer Show, folks. I'm sure that you can get the entire preview from them from the L3 perspective. Thanks, Cesar. I appreciate you, man.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Oh, big thanks to Cesar for joining us. And he will be back for Twitter Spaces ahead of US-Mexico on Friday, as well as after that match. To wrap it all up, we'll see what the result is. We'll get our predictions here in just a little bit. A reminder, you can watch 9:10 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2, Univision, Today in a. All right, let's start with Christian Pulisic, I think, because that is sort of the there's a domino effect there and a very big one. He's just sort of returning for Chelsea, and it seems like the entire Chelsea squad wants to tweet about how happy they are that he's back. Meanwhile, Thomas Tuchel wants to go on the media and say something very predictable, which is that, quote, I hope they don't overuse him and are responsible enough. Christian still feels some pain. It's a matter of pain management. It's not a matter of re-injury. Okay, that part is good. Or being still injured. It's just painful. He's tried hard. He desperately wants to come back. We need him back. We... being Chelsea, it was a good start for him in Malmo. This was after Champions League, and he had 10 minutes against Burnley as well. But, quote, we, Chelsea, are a bit worried. Hopefully everybody, including himself, is responsible, there's that word again, and doesn't get carried away by emotions and by helping his country to win a super important match. Okay, well, Thomas, emotions and super important match. Emotions in U.S.-Mexico, buddy, those go hand in hand. Like, you can't separate those. Hopefully it goes well. He gets his minutes that elevate him, and he'll come back even stronger. Charlie, What was Thomas Tuchel saying there? Do you think... Well, we know what he was saying. He was saying, don't start this man, is what I was hearing him say. I don't know if you agree.
Don't overexert Christian Pulisic.
Do you think Greg Berhalter and Christian Pulisic... Because Christian, I have to believe, will have a significant say in something like this. It is his body, his career, after all.
Yep.
And he is, he's the guy on my screen background here flexing on Mexico after scoring a PK in the Nations League final. He is the guy who demanded to stay on the field in games that he maybe should have come off and had an aggravation there as well. How do you actually think the U.S. men's national team will handle this situation? Will Christian Pulisic start? Should he start?
We can't be naive. And neither is Greg Berhalter. Neither is Ernie Stewart. Or Brian McBride, for that matter, and Christian Pulisic. He spends the majority of his time with Chelsea Football Club. Chelsea need him to be healthy for selection. And for him to get back to the Christian Pulisic we know and continue on his trajectory to maximize his potential, he needs to be in the manager's good graces. So basically, what the manager, Thomas Tuchel, is telling Greg Berhalter and Christian is, you need to be healthy so that you can perform for Chelsea. Now, it's good that you're going to represent your country. I know it's important to all their players that they go and represent their country, but don't overdo it and don't play yourself out of contention so that when you return, you can't perform at the level we need you to perform and that you yourself need to perform at to play. So I think Greg Berhalter and him are going to have that conversation, and he's not going to start against Mexico, even though we want him to, even though he probably himself wants to. The best decision, considering the lack of match fitness that he's had up to this point, is coming in off the bench and using that spark and that energy to give us a good 25 minutes, if that's what it takes, 30, probably 60, 65 around that minute to come in and change the game. And that he does have, I think, confidence in Brandon Aaronson. And if it's Timothy Weah or if it's Paul Arriola, I hope it's Timothy Weah and Ricardo Pepi up top. And that, now you have a real game changer off the bench. So for me, I think that's the option that you go with. And then you hope that the game is, if you're not in the lead, it's a draw at that moment and things work out for the best. But this is a tricky situation as a manager of your country and Greg Berhalter as a coach, and then as a player, trying to appeal, to representing my country, but also knowing that I have to take into account what Thomas Tuchel is thinking on the other side.
You said we would all want him to start. Everyone who wants Christian Pulisic, with all the information we have and know, to start against Mexico, say aye. I don't hear anything. I don't personally want him to start. Yeah. I agree with you, Charlie. I agree with Thomas Tuchel in a lot of
Anders
ways.
Anders said I.
No. Anders did say I. That's true. That's one out of five here.
I think a lot of
I don't say
a lot
I.
of fans.
I don't say I.
I think a lot of fans out there just knowing Christian Pulisic and he's at Chelsea will say I.
Well,
but
I
you
think
dig deep. I think the smart decision obviously is not to play him from the start.
So we had this conversation on Monday about in MLS, which with five subs, I think the calculation can start to change. Of if someone has 35 to 45 minutes in them, and you think it's best for your team to start them, I think it's okay to do it now because you can still make four subs the rest of the game. If you sub them at halftime, you still have your three moments. So that should shift. And I understand, and I've said it before, like where Christian Pulisic stands, not just in our minds, not just in the world's minds, but I think in his teammates' minds. As a leader, going to play Mexico at home in a World Cup qualifier, I think there's a ton of value of having that player around in some respect. So if you think it's a start in 45 minutes and then you take him off, I could understand that. Again, I trust Timothy Weah as a player and what he can do for this program and Brendan Aaronson that I don't feel like it's necessary.
What's the best way for Greg Berhalter to set this up, Doyle? Who are the wingers and how does he use Christian Pulisic?
Yeah.
What situations and what role?
I tend to lean towards the use of him as a second half super sub. I feel like it would make the most sense. That said, the idea of him being a leader, maybe even the leader in a lot of ways, and therefore you need him on from the start and you plan to sub him either at halftime or the hour mark, that's compelling as well. Either way, I actually think that we should see him on the right side, on the right wing, instead of on the left wing. And I know he has been more spectacular over the years for club and country when he's playing inverted on the left. I think he's more consistent when he plays on the right. I think he gives you, because I mean, he has electric pace, so he can get the edge. He could pin back the opposing fullback. And if you look at the way Canada attacked Mexico, like every time they got the ball, they looked to get vertical constantly, and they were constantly getting behind the left back. I don't remember
who Gallardo.
Was it Gallardo? It was the Gallardo. And like, whether it's from the start or you know, after being subbed, I like that matchup a lot for Christian Pulisic. And at the same time, I mean, Brendan Aaronson has been so good when he plays inverted on the left, coming in to combine. And he doesn't have the sort of straight line speed that Pulisic does. So he's not as much of a threat to just blow past the left side, the left fullback, and get into space that way. So I like the idea of keeping Aaronson inverted on the left and Pulisic on the right. And the other thing is, like, look, man, Christian Pulisic, I still think, is the most talented player in the pool, other than maybe Gio Reyna, maybe. But when he's played inverted on the left for the U.S., he has not been effective recently. He has been so selfish. In fact, that's how he got hurt. Right. If you go back and you look at that play, instead of releasing an early ball for, I think it was Anthony Robinson overlapping into space, instead of releasing an early ball to get him into the optimal assist zone, the Man City zone, Pulisic just stays on the ball and dribbles directly into the hurt locker. Like, I don't want him doing that in either of these games. I want him out wide on the right. I want him being away from the play to open up the back line for the opposition. And I don't want him trying to run the show, because for the U.S., he has not been good at it for a good long time.
And you hit the nail on the head. I love it, Doyle. For me, it's the same thing when Christian Pulisic was put as the number 10. They were forcing him in the midfield because he technically is your greatest player, your best player technically, and you want him on the ball often and as much as you possibly can. So the problem is he's at his best when he's isolated, 1v1, when he doesn't have two or three guys marking him, which he would when he's in the middle of the pitch. So when he's been on the left, he's trying to come inside and do too much.
Yeah.
And that you're taking away from what you're good at. So I would love to see, you know, I'm sure they have these conversations, Greg and Christian, saying, you're at your best when you're simple. When you play simple, you're effective. Because if you're taking one or two touches, that means it's because they're bringing two or three guys over to kind of deal with you. And now you're freeing up space for everyone else. And at the times that they don't bring two or three guys over, you have the green light. Go down the left flank, come inside, and combine, play one touch. But as soon as you take too many extra touches, then you're giving the opposition the license to come in and just take over and just hammer you. And that's what led him into the injuries, and that's what has led him to multiple turnovers. So I think we'll get to a point where Christian is playing on the left, and he's being super simple with his game, simplifying everything, and then that in turn allows him to blossom and flourish within the system.
So if he doesn't start, we kind of outlined it here. And Aronson's going to be on the field. I think you can just say that.
Yeah.
I mean, given his form, given his contributions, given his directness, which works so well, as you said, for Canada against Mexico. So who plays on the right, or who plays with him? Is it Areola or is it Weah? Who do you think it will be, Dave? Who would you want it to be?
I would start Timothy Weah, as I said earlier. I was really excited about him coming into the last window. It was bumpy for him. The Panama game was just tough. It was tough for everyone. I thought it was going to be a game where he could show what he could do on the ball for this team when a guy like Pulisic's out, when a guy like Gio Reyna's out. But still at home, the surface that it'll be at TQL, the way the game will play out, I think will fit more to his game. And the one thing that stands out for me with Weah is just how well he's played defensively for Lille over the last year and a half to earn playing time. And so you look at this matchup and we sort of glossed over it because it's so obvious, but Chucky, Raul Jimenez, and Tecatito are starting. And they are a monster up top as of a front three. They are probably as good as Canada is. I think Jimenez, before he got hurt, was the second best player in the region. And Chucky's starting for the best team in Serie A right now, starting in Champions League. Tecatito has that contract issue with Porto, so he's been off, but when he's been on the field, he's normally been the best player in most games he's played in CONCACAF. So you will need help defending those three, and it was something that Canada struggled with at times on the road at Mexico. And so I think Timothy Weah is a guy who gives you quality both ways, as well as the ability to come inside and deal with physicality because he's played center forward if it's necessary, if that's what works out. So if you play him on the left, he can come inside and give space for Anthony Robinson to charge into, and Robinson's never going to come inside. So you kind of need a player who's comfortable doing that alongside him, or it could be Brendan Aaronson. But those would be the two that I would go with. We know how much Greg trusts Paul Areola. We know how big a game this is, and you are missing Giassi Zardes. You are missing Christian Pulisic, you're missing Sergiño Dest, you're missing a lot of the big names and pieces that have been around over the last few years, and that might mean Greg Berhalter looks for the safety blanket in Paul Areola.
And his ability to counterpress and win balls in dangerous areas and exploit space in behind. He is more of that sort of vertical get to the end line winger. He's not really like, I'm going to come inside and create and make those passes. He's put pressure on, make the right run, and get behind. We'll see what he decides, but I think you have great options no matter what with those four. Depending on Pulisic's status, again, I think we're all on board. Hey, start him on the bench. Now is not necessary because of what we said about the octagon and about sort of the margin for error. Now is not the time to say, F it. Like, let's risk the health again of our best player whose coach at his club just said, hey, please don't do that again. We basically lost him for the entire period between the last international break and now. He's just now getting back. And so that's the winger position.
And by the way, I think if Jesse Marsh wasn't American, he would have also been saying this, because Greg played Tyler Adams 270 minutes in the opening window, and then he was out for like 3 weeks after that, and then brought him back and started him again. So this has been a problem that the U.S. has to manage.
Do we want to do central midfield now? And that question, those three, or do we want to go goalkeeper? Both questions.
We do the goalkeeper thing to death. Let's talk about central midfield. It's more interesting.
All right. Tell me what's interesting to you.
What's interesting is the matchup, more so than the personnel. Like, it has to be Adams, McKenney, and Musa. They weren't perfect last window, but there's so much potential with those three guys. And the matchup, I think, against, if it's Ace Ace and Guardado, like, those two guys couldn't keep up versus Eustaquio and Kay at home. Like, they're like, Canada, if you look back at that game, Canada controlled the game by just blowing up central midfield. And like, as great as Ace Ace and Guardado are, I like the physical battle a lot. If I'm the U.S. looking at those two guys and say it's Cordova, or if it's Edson at the back of the diamond with, back of the triangle with Aceh and Guardado in front of him, however you slice it, I like the potential for the U.S. midfield to really impose themselves upon the game and use not just their physicality but the ball. Make Mexico chase the damn ball the way Canada did, and like that is where it wasn't love, but like that's where Mexico kind of almost lost the game against Canada last month, and it's where I think the U.S. could potentially win this game.
It's why it's a huge test for Weston McKennie,
yeah,
because the way that Eustaquio and Kay play in tight spaces with the ball is completely different than what he does. And Tyler Adams doesn't take as many risks in possession. And that's what I think flipped it for Canada, as Doyle mentioned, was Eustaquio and Kay were super comfortable breaking the first man and keeping the ball in midfield and not feeling like they had to bounce it back to the center back who gave it to them or play an early ball outside when they were under pressure. That's not something the U.S. has been great at under Greg Berhalter. And it's been an area where I think we all had higher expectations because of the names of the clubs all these players play for. But Yunus Musa, until this week, hasn't played there for Valencia. Tyler doesn't play in a similar system. And Weston McKennie is more of a second forward covering ground than he is a dictating central midfielder. But I agree with Doyle that it's a spot to take advantage of because of the weaknesses of Mexico. So it just comes down to it's a huge test for those players, and it could be a huge growing moment for them.
I think that Yunus Musa is the X factor, because we know what Tyler Adams is. Every game, he's playing at the six. That's Tyler Adams. He's locked that thing in. Then Weston McKennie has locked that thing in. He's playing now. He had to work his way back into the good graces at Juve. He's done that. We've seen when he's playing at his best at Juve what he can contribute, right? All over the pitch, ball winner, can also make those late runs in the box, can score goals. That is an asset that, you know, we haven't always had. And then you throw in, who's that player who can take over the game, who can get on the ball, who can break pressure on the dribble, who can dictate the tempo? Because those two, Weston and Tyler, are always kind of winning the ball, challenging, want the ball off their feet. They're not the player neither of them are the player that you can say, you dictate the game, you control the flow, you can, you know, switch the point of attack. You need somebody who can do that. Yunus Musa is gonna, I think, develop into that player who we can say, hey, you control the ball. Kind of be like a Darlington Nagbe when you are in possession of the ball, but get forward, break the lines, and then find Christian Pulisic, because you've beaten players. Now they have to kind of readjust who they're covering, and then that opens up those passing lanes for Ricardo Pepi, for Christian Pulisic and Aaronson. So I'm excited about that trio, and I think it has to be the trio unless you move Yunus Musa to the right, where he's played at for Valencia, and then you bring in somebody
like Gio Reyna
as an attacking midfielder. That's the only option that I see like down the line.
Yeah,
but otherwise, I think those are the three you go.
So and you hit the nail on the head in how they need to play in terms of creating those moments where you have the midfield beat and you can drive at the Mexican defense and force them to scramble, force them to make decisions. If you go back and watch how Canada played them, Kay and Eustaquio were able to do that again and again and again. And like that's how Tejon Buchanan ended up, you know, essentially 1v1 with Gallardo on one side and obviously Alphonso Davies on the other side. Nobody in CONCACAF is going to keep up with either of those guys. And the U.S. can actually replicate that in a lot of ways. You can replicate that with Pulisic or Wea on the right side. And then if you have Aaronson as a left-sided winger, he will come in, right? And he will make the Mexican back line a little bit more narrow. And that gives the entire flank to Anthony Robinson. And there's not a lot of guys who can keep up with Anthony Robinson. So it's all there for the U.S. if that midfield trio, which I absolutely love, if that midfield trio can play the type of game that I think all four of us feel they're capable of playing.
By the way, Greg Berhalter says that Jenno Cambusio, who's doing real well right now, of course, in Serie A for Nizia, will be, quote, pushing for a starting position. Does he mean against Mexico, or does he mean against Jamaica, or does he just mean, hey, this is encouraging, Gianluca, keep doing what you're doing, but you're not a starter yet?
Encouraging.
Encouraging. I think it's
encouraging.
Right?
Because who's he going to play over? That's what I was saying. But, you know, it's also unfortunate for players when they get caught in a position where you're competing against other professionals who are young like you, but are just, at the moment, better in time, you know? So he's just got to continue to work until he gets to a position where he's like, hey, I'm playing for an AC Milan or an Inter Milan, and we're playing in Champions League, and I'm doing it. So he just has to keep trying to force his way onto the field.
Speaking of moments in time, we skipped over the goalkeeper one, but let's go rapid fire here so we can get to Canada, and I'll just sort of pass these around for you guys. Greg Berhalter, again, his press availability, did not commit to a goalkeeper for this match. Zach Steffen started in the last game for the U.S., against Costa Rica. Who do you think, Dave, will start in this game? Who do you think should start?
David Goss would start Matt Turner. Greg Berhalter will start Zach Steffen.
Yeah.
I actually thought that Turner signing the extension with Man City said a lot. One,
Steffen signing.
What if Matt Turner, Zach Turner also went to Man City?
Oh, my God. I said Zach Turner. We're on to something. Matt Steffen is – no, I'm just kidding. But I think him signing that extension says that Greg said, you're going to be good if you're there. Don't worry about all these people, all the, you know, talking heads, a.k.a. all of us out here in this little U.S. national team world saying, you got to be playing every week. I will still play you, even if you're not starting every week for Man City. So I think I'm with you. I think that Zach Steffen is going to start.
All that really matters is the badge of the club that those super fans on Twitter can put into their best 11 graphics. That's really how we're choosing teams here.
Well, whether or not it's, you know, Matt Steffen or Zach Turner, we're going to have a great goalkeeper.
They're also probably both pushing for an all-conference at quarterback in the MAC or the Mountain West Conference, because that's what both those names sound like.
How about right back? Doyle, who starts at right back? Joe Scally is in.
Yeah, I have him.
Would he start against Mexico? It's hard to believe
that
he would.
Get out of here. No. Wait, so, as Doyle says...
No. Like if there's one thing that Greg Berhalter's been willing to do, it's been throw high-performing teenagers into a starting lineup. Even in big games. I mean, Ricardo Pepi starting that Honduras game changed qualifying for the U.S. And you could argue that Scally is just as accomplished now at club level as Pepi was 3 months ago or 2 months ago. So I actually have Scally in my starting 11. He's the only newcomer. He's the only new face. Everybody else that I have is like old standbys. Look, Reggie Cannon has only just gotten back into the lineup for Boavista. And the other option is DeAndre Yedlin. And while DeAndre Yedlin played against Mexico in the Nations League final, and he matches up 1v1 defensively very well, DeAndre Yedlin also has moments where he chases butterflies off the ball defensively. And Berhalter has generally not treated him like a first-choice player. So I think Berhalter's going to throw caution to the wind here and drop Joe Scally in there. It's been his MO throughout qualifying. I mean, there's four different teenagers have started in qualifying already. Scally's been as good as any of them at the club level over the past 3 months. So why not put him in here too?
That would make the Twitter spaces awfully fun. It'd be an interesting note for this match. All eyes on Joe Scally against the Mexican front three and whoever it is. Sometimes they swap them, but would probably be Tecatito.
Yeah.
On the right, it'd probably be Lozano.
It'll be Chucky on the left. And Tecatito on the right, I think.
That would be a big test to start off your U.S. national team career for Joe Scally. How about Pepi the starter? Charlie, how many goals does he get in this window? But more importantly, how well does he perform? Is it up to snuff? Does it meet what he's done so far?
You know, I think that he's done a tremendous job coming into the U.S. men's national team at such a young age with all the expectations.
Feels like there's going to be a but right now.
There's no but.
Okay.
I think he just has to continue to improve. And whether that is being the striker who scores goals in those moments that the team, you know, provides him an opportunity, or being the conduit into the attacking third and playing off a Christian Pulisic and allowing him creating the space for him, or playing balls in for Brandon Aaronson, or being that striker who's going to create space and occupying two center backs. Finding that balance is so important. And knowing that against Mexico, maybe you only get one chance and you have to finish it. Or you're playing against Canada and you get that one chance, you got to finish it. So just being clinical when he does get the chance. But I think for him, he's done a tremendous job, and there's no one else. We are relying on Ricardo Pepi right now to be that guy. He knows that now. So embracing the role, and I think he's done that, but just staying hungry. And yeah, I think he's put in a position to succeed right now.
All right. Prediction time. Make him. Tell me. Winner, loss, or draw? We've got Cesar saying draw. He's got 1-1. Anybody going to say something other than a win? No. Nobody is going to say anything. I'm going to say a win. Come on. I'm going to go hope first always in matches like these. I'm always going to lead with like optimism and the U.S. at the end giving us a giddy post-game show and feelings that last for days, weeks, sometimes even years.
But typically, I'm the one who's like, oh, Mexico's super strong. Oh, I can't ever say I think the U.S. are not going to win. But right now, Mexico is like too shaky for me. They're unpredictable. And this U.S. team is like ready for the challenge, and they've beaten this Mexico side at full strength. I think the U.S. at home are going to win. I do.
Doyle, the U.S. has been a little shaky themselves in World Cup qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't speak up, so I'm taking that as a win.
What? Cutting out?
Huh? What? Won't jinx it. Not jinxing it. All right, I feel you. Dave, do you want to go on a record, or do you want to...
I think it's 50-50.
Pretend that your internet connection is shaky.
Yeah, no, I think it's 50-50. And so I don't think there's any reason the U.S. wouldn't win, couldn't win, shouldn't at home. But I don't think this is a game the U.S. dominates and creates a ton of chances. What we saw in the summer was set piece were dangerous. And if you think back to the Nations League final, it was Hector Moreno who was a half foot offside from going up 2-0, going into the halftime locker room. And then the U.S. gets the goal off Gio Reyna, and that sort of settles the team down and gets them through the rest of the game. But it wasn't a game that the U.S. dictated, and neither was the Gold Cup final. So I think we'll see some of the similar tropes of a USA-Mexico game, and one of those has been that the U.S. has normally won those games at home, even when Mexico's had more of the ball, or you could argue was the better team at times. So I'm hoping we'll see something similar.
50-50, internet connection issues. Charlie, you and I are on the record, man. We're here. We got to stand by.
Did I not just say the U.S. was going to win?
I didn't hear that. I heard 50-50.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, I heard 50-50.
There was a little waffling going on with that one. You said in the past, and there's a lot of couching.
I'll put my money down off air. Charlie knows.
All right. The same way I did with the Red Bulls in the playoffs, baby. Make your best predictions privately where you can't be held to account. Before we get out of here, Canada has a huge match, too, at home against Costa Rica. As we said, they're in third. Dave, you're our honorary Canadian. So tell me what's going on with Canada right now, about the roster, about what John Herdman's feeling, about what this squad thinks they can accomplish in this window with what? This is two home games? It's Costa Rica and Mexico?
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity. One of the big things is just playing in Edmonton, outside 50,000 capacity at the stadium, and playing outside of Toronto or Vancouver for the first time, I think, in two cycles, going back to when they played in Edmonton. So this is a really big deal, I think, for something we've talked about a lot, which is winning the country back, or winning it for the first time ever in terms of believing in this team, believing in this group. You're going to Alfonso Davies' hometown to host Mexico outside in 0-degree weather. This, to me, this is literally USA-Mexico 2000. Like, that's what's the hope is that this is that rallying point, and you got fans out with the thermometers showing how cold it is and all of that, and creating a bit of a fortress and having a huge moment. Now, I think Canada has struggled at home. I think they have struggled when the game is supposed to be won and dictated by them. They opened up and were down against Honduras and Panama. Both of those in home games, they were shaking the opening few minutes against El Salvador as well. So this Costa Rica game is a huge moment to set the stage for that Mexico game. And there's a lot of excitement. It's a pretty healthy group that's coming in. And I think this is the best Canadian roster of all time, not because of the top end talent, but because everyone at every spot plays for a good club at a good level. You don't have any unattached FCs in this group. You don't have people who are on second teams. You don't have people who aren't getting minutes. Like, you even look down, Derek Cornelius is starting in the Greek League, and he's not going to play in this window. And now you bring in a new player. You get another dual national to go your way, and you've made these ranks even stronger. I guess Cavallini would be the one player who's not been successful at the club level, but at center forward, they get even stronger. And so I think there's a lot of excitement and a lot of promise.
You've been high in Canada, Doyle.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for from them in these two games?
For them to take the next step and to play like favorites. David's right. They have had some great moments, especially at Mexico and at the U.S., but they have struggled at home throughout qualifying when there's been tasked with sort of dictating the game. And it's not because they don't have the talent. They certainly, like we said a million times already, they're one of the three most talented teams in CONCACAF. I would argue maybe even one of the top two teams in CONCACAF. And they have central midfielders like Eustaquio and Kay who can dictate the game with the ball. And I think that at some point they're going to figure out how to weaponize that to the extent where they're pulling apart opposing defenses for the likes of, you know, Alphonso Davies, Jonathan David, and Kyle Larin, and the rest of that great attack. So they haven't quite gotten that rhythm yet, and I think the upshot of that has been taking a couple of like crazy risks with how high they've pushed their fullbacks or their wingbacks. They don't need to do that. They shouldn't need to do that, at least in the first game. They might have to do that a little bit against Mexico, but I like the step for Canada now is be the best, man. Like you've gone on the road against the U.S. and Mexico and played with zero fear, and you've gotten two really good results. You have to start showing your fans at home that will translate into goals and points, and, you know, 12 months from now, a trip to Qatar.
I have to add that I was so impressed with the Canadian national team, not against the U.S. on the road, which I thought they did a good job of staying in it and capitalizing when they did create their opportunities. But more importantly, the result in Azteca. Eustaquio and Mark Anthony Kay, they made the game. They sat in front of the back four, and they were able to keep possession and play out of trouble. I was so impressed with their relationship and the way they were able to rediscover areas of the pitch to get involved in, win the second balls, win those big battles, and outplay Mexicans midfield in large parts of that match. And then Kamal Miller and Steven Vitoria, I thought, oh man, they're going to get outrun. Vitoria, you know, doesn't have pace. He's old. They were in control because of the midfield, because of Mark Anthony Kay and Eustaquio's positioning. And we all know Alphonso Davies, you try and isolate him. you can't push forward. He's going to get him behind. And then when you sit back, he has the ability to beat you on the dribble and combined. Tejan Buchanan is now morphing into kind of a similar type player where you isolate him 1v1, good night. He's going to put you to sleep because he's going to get right by you. He'll come inside. And he's starting to realize, man, my potential. And then Jonathan David had a poor game against Mexico. And if he's kind of in tune with Davies and Buchanan and he's playing, man, that's, like I said, that's the best. For me, it's the top trio in CONCACAF just because of how electric they are. And Jonathan David, for me, hasn't really morphed into that player that he can be yet. I think he's still trying to figure out the type of striker, what his capabilities are when he's playing at his best. So for me, that's where I've been most impressed with this Canadian national team. And then Richie Larea and Alistair Johnson have done also a tremendous job of finding their feet on the international stage.
And it actually raises kind of a good question for John Herdman. Is like Jonathan David has looked best for Canada when he's been able to play off of Kyle Larin. When Larin is the true center forward and David gets to drift a little bit, maybe even come back into midfield and combine, you know, more of a second forward. But okay, and they did a lot of that and it worked really well throughout the summer. But last window, it was much more of a 4-2-3-1.
Well, Larin was hurt.
Yeah, right. Larin's not hurt now. Right. Larin's back. Do you go back to the 3-5-2? Do you go back to Laren and David up top when the 4-2-3-1 was so promising and nobody in CONCACAF can keep up with Tajon Buchanan and Alphonso Davies as winger? So it's a good problem to have. It is the first time in my entire life I've looked at the Canadian coach and thought, man, that guy has too much talent on his hands. At this point, I trust John Herdman to get it right. And at this point, I trust that attack to figure it out as well, because they've been really good.
We could see what kind of in 2009 with the U.S. Men's National Team, how we were playing, just do a 4-4-2 and Laren and Jonathan David up top, and you play with two sitting midfielders like we had Michael Bradley and Ricardo Clark, who would just sit. And then the attack was Landon Donovan on one side, Clint Dempsey on one side, and me and Josie up top. And we didn't have a 10. But we didn't need a 10 because of how dynamic we were at that time. And one of the two sitting mids, whether it was Ricardo or most likely it was Michael, would make a late run and get involved to win the second balls and be kind of that late run into the box. So we could also see
that. I think there's a chance Tajon plays wing back in the Costa Rica game, or Alphonso Davies has to play that wing back, which one of the nice things for this team has been Alistair Johnson's ability to step out and play as a fullback either way, and so it kind of gives freedom. Jonathan Osorio is probably pushed out of the team if this is the group you're going with, what you guys talked about, and I don't think that's ridiculous to say, but it was him and Davies linking up for that Mexico goal when the two midfielders drew everyone forward. Alphonso Davies steps in, picks it up, and Oso makes the run. As Doyle said, there's a ton of talent. You can't fit everyone on the field every game. I would be surprised if it didn't look different between Costa Rica and Mexico. Understanding the opponents, understanding that test, and deciding, you know, and it's not about resting players or getting them to the next game, although we don't know what Atiba Hutchinson will be for this team or can be. But I think it's about what are your strengths against Costa Rica versus what are your strengths against Mexico.
An opportunity for both the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, by the way, to put some distance between themselves and the Chasers in the octagon here. Remember, Friday pregame when the lineups drop an hour before kick, Twitter Spaces, it'll be on my handle, Andrew_Wiebe. We will go through all the lineups. We'll talk about all the storylines. We'll have Cesar Hernandez to help us on the Mexico side. Tune in for that, and then join us after the final whistle, as always, for Extra Time Club and Country, driven by Continental Tire. That Mexico game on Friday, 9:10 p.m. Eastern. ESPN2, Univision, TUDN, you'll need a second screen because Canada will host Costa Rica. That's also 9:05 p.m. Eastern, so it'll start slightly before Paramount Plus on that one. Then for the U.S., at Jamaica. For Canada, home again against Mexico on Tuesday. We'll do it all over again. The podcast after Friday will drop. Then on Monday, we'll be back to Major League Soccer doing our Continental Tire Awards, doing some best 11s, getting some early mail on the playoffs. We'll preview the whole thing on Thursday. So subscribe, rate us, check us out on YouTube. Stay tuned. So much content to come as the Octagon and the 2021 Audi MLS Cup playoffs get going. That's it for us.
The content kings.
The content kings. All right. I'll take that. I'll take that. We'll see you on Friday. I'm not going to say the content kings. No. Charlie, we're out of that. All right.
My partners in soccer.
Have a great week.